champion of the world. Maybe a socialite with long stringy pearls, but you got to serve somebody. Hey, you gotta serve somebody. Maybe the devil, maybe the Lord, but you gotta serve somebody. Rock and roll addict, prancing on the stage. Drugs that choke a man, women in the cage. Maybe a businessman, some high degree thief. May call your doctor, may call your chief. Serve somebody.
That's the matriarch of the blues, Etta James, serving up Bob Dylan's famous 1979 song, Gotta Serve Somebody. This is from Etta James's award-winning 2000 album, Matriarch of the Blues, a fitting title for a fitting artist. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and what a day. What a day it's going to be today. The vote is on in all over the country. The Electoral College is casting its votes to determine who officially will be President of the United States and who officially will be Vice President. In the President category, of course, you know, it's the contest is between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. And so far, it looks like if the projections hold, Clinton would have given a good accounting of herself, but she would not win. It looks like Trump is going to, in fact, clinch the presidency officially. And by 7 o'clock, it is projected that by 7 o'clock, Hawaii will cast the last votes. There would be four votes. All four will go to Hillary Clinton, bringing her total to 232. Trump still will beat her with 306 electoral votes. Now, for the life of me, I just don't get it with the Electoral College, the popular vote versus the, you know, the Electoral College vote. As you know, the popular vote doesn't determine who the president is in U.S. election law. It is the Electoral College, and the Electoral College is made up of 100 members of the U.S. Senate, 435 members of the House, and three representatives from the yawning contradiction that is known as Washington, D.C. It is not a state. It has no vote in Congress, but it is given three Electoral College votes, a kind of consolation prize. This is the biggest contradiction ever. As committed as this country is, every candidate is absolutely committed to the idea of democracy. And still, for all these years, Washington, D.C., has no hope, it seems, of becoming a state, although it has more people than Rhode Island, as I've said before. The answer is very clear why it is not a state. I think that the last thing this country wants to do is to grant statehood, which is a form of sovereignty and independence, to a predominantly black district. They don't want to do it. It just would not be done. And not only would this be a black state, it would be a black state within the confines, the geographic confines of the White House. Absolutely no No way is that going to happen. But it should be pursued because it is, in fact, a major constitutional question, to my mind, regarding taxation without representation, the rights of people to enjoy some degree of full participation in government. There's no legitimate reason that Washington, D.C. is not a state, except, as I contend, because it is a predominantly black district, and it does qualify in terms of population required to have a state. For all these years, nobody has been able to explain, nobody in charge, if I put it that way, has been able to explain why Washington, D.C. is not a state and why it does not even appear on any discussion with regard to representation, why it's not even an issue. It's like, don't even bother to raise it, because we won't be considering it. So that's how it's breaking out at this point, right after this program. A sufficient number of the electors would have voted, and Trump, despite all of the hubbub, Trump, if things go the way they are, Trump will officially be declared the president of the United States. But it goes through yet another thing, some other ceremony come January, I believe, where they have to open an envelope and they got to... It just, you know, it is tiresome. It is amazing how many obstacles are put in the path of democratic participation when that is exactly what people say they want. We want people to vote. We want people to participate. But there are all these different hurdles to what should be a pretty straightforward process. You have an election. People vote. We get to know who the winner is. And life goes on. Every country seems to be able to manage this process without all of this Sturm und Drang. And they're able to govern themselves and participate in their processes of elections quite easily. But here we have all of this going on, and we just can't get this thing over with. Get it over with already, and let's move on. Well, let's hope by the end of the day we would have gotten at least a little closer to that, the idea of starting new and having to face down this beast called the new president and his cabinet and whatnot, which he's still filling out. But I just want this thing over with already, and it just would not go away. And you know, it's not going away easily, because there is a major element here that just won't allow it to go away, and that's Hillary Clinton. And we had all these objections, and we know the script. Hillary Clinton, from the word go, had been pretty much nominated. They didn't even wait for the party to officially nominate her. She was just automatically nominated coming out of the gate. And this was an indication that the Democratic Party process had already been corrupted from the word go. Trump at least had to fight off 17 other people to emerge as the nominee for the party, for the Republican Party. It was a true contest in that sense. Whatever you want to think about the Republican Party, et cetera. It was a true enough contest, and it at least presented a picture of, well, we have all these different people wanting to run, and it's a fight to the finish. the best person wins. Turns out the best person was also the most surprising person, because Donald Trump had never held public office. He has absolutely no experience in this area, but he was not alone. Several of the candidates were running totally new to the process, totally new to the world of politics, and they didn't do very well at all. The advantage, of course, that Trump had was high visibility and lots and lots and lots of cash. But here's an exciting thing to note. With all of the cash that he has and did have when he started his campaign, he masterfully manipulated the media so that he didn't really spend as much money as Hillary Clinton did. She shoveled a whole lot of money behind this quest to be the lone star of the show on the Democratic side. She had really no competition as such. And what competition that she did have that was significant was that competition from Bernie Sanders. And she ate him up and spat him out. And he went along with it. She absolutely destroyed his movement. But that's also his problem. He did that too. He was responsible. And that's where we're kind of going today. We're seeing the process getting closer and closer to an end. Hopefully, that would be mercifully today. We'll get the formal pronouncement of the winner of the race. But we have to look at the conduct here. Whatever one wants to think about the Republicans, whatever you think, just put it aside for a second, your personal feelings aside. They're not unimportant. We're just trying to get a clinical look at how things evolved in this race. And I'm trying to take a look at it in a detailed fashion to get us to understand the power of manipulation, the power of propaganda, the power of systems when they're organized to achieve a particular goal. And the candidate, the party, the system, they all work together to produce a result. Now, it happens in this case that there was a hiccup. Hillary Clinton entered the race absolutely confident of winning. And there are reasons. We know that in many situations, while the primaries were being run and then the general election, we had massive irregularities. Massive irregularities. Nobody did anything about it. As, you know, it's customary. If you have at your behest the full service of a power structure that is behind you, you see to it that every aspect of an election that could possibly, you know, ruin your chances of success, they are totally vanquished. So it is ironic, because we have to look at it now in light of recent developments. The person squawking the loudest about the election being manipulated by Russia is the person whose candidacy brought forth all of these awful undersides of politics. And it's not new. This is not new at all. Hillary Clinton and the Democratic Party finally were conjoined in the eyes of the public as being one and the same. And that wasn't a good thing. The party was seen as being her personal property that she had organized within the party, and organized people and situated people in the party to see to it that she would get elected. And that included President Obama. You may recall when she did her farewell tour. I had never heard of something like this. You're Secretary of State. You're a governmental employee. if you feel it's time to quit and concentrate on your presidential campaign, quit. She went on a farewell tour. I had never heard, and nobody in the Democratic Party seemed able to stop this insane thing. It was just an insane move. But anyhow, she, and with Barack Obama as her she was show and tell, part of the show and tell of the farewell tour of as Secretary of State, although there wasn't very much really that would have been beneficial to her. But this is part of the orchestrated campaign. A person with such a rotten profile is made to smell absolutely clean. And then you see the formation of the storyline, the narrative that her election, her eventual election, will take. You know, we saw the development of the narrative of making history as the first woman in the United States to be president. And we saw her over-exaggerated accomplishments, most of them having a really negative downside, but that's not what we were told. We saw the co-optation of the media, everybody dragged into the circle of being the extension, the PR extension of the Clinton campaign, to lift her up, to do the work of inventing this character called Hillary Clinton, who, and it must be said, I mean, the attitude was she was already president of the United States. We just have to go through a few more of the formalities, like an election. But for all intents and purposes, you're looking at your next president here. All of the things that the press should have been doing as part of its historic role, at least theoretically, of keeping things kind of even-handed and honest, they had no problem being overwhelmingly sympathetic to Hillary Clinton. I talked about the fact that money was a major factor. It was what knocked out all of the other candidates, for the most part. They didn't have the money. They couldn't keep up with this purchase of the presidency. This election is the costliest election in U.S. history. And a vast chunk of the money was going to go to the media in terms of advertising. This is where Donald Trump showed genius, actually, by using a free medium, Twitter mostly, to send out these little one- and two-line messages at no cost. He was extremely unorthodox in his approach. He's also unorthodox in his way of thinking. And that is going to be looked at and be tackled as soon as this hurdle is over and the formality is done with, and we know we now have officially a president taking charge as of January the 20th. Another kind of fight begins and should begin because there's so much already developing that is so disturbing. But with Hillary Clinton, when it became clear that things were kind of unraveling or were not as tight as they thought it was going to be to absolutely, positively guarantee her the presidency, then we saw a very nice sliver of what really Hillary Clinton is about. The Clinton Foundation and its incredible criminal activity, actually. We saw horrible administration of the Department of State. which was just a mess. We saw horrible decisions being made. And these are the things they started to talk about. The media started to talk about it. Because at that time, Trump, if he had to spend money, he had it. And he had indicated in so many ways he was willing to consider opening up the sluices of his campaign war chest and getting some money to the media for, quote, coverage, unquote. But structurally, Hillary Clinton's campaign began to fall apart under its own dead weight, the dead weight of accumulated wrongs. So now we have the counter emerging that somebody is doing it to her. She's a victim here. And this was a constant narrative. Until finally, she just said it plain. It's like, Donald Trump is being held by the Russians. And she saw to it that it took shape. It actually grew some roots. We were hacked. We lost the election because Vladimir Putin decided in one way or the other that Donald Trump was to be the winning candidate and put into play a whole bunch of cyber attacks and other forms of interfering with the United States, the pristine history of the democratic order in the United States, to assure that Donald Trump, Putin's friend, will win the election and she would lose. We had then moving, she did not raise the question herself until she actually lost the election. At the end, toward the end of the campaign, was when she got the glimpse that things were not as tight, and it was not 100% certain that she was a shoo-in. And we had the incipient talk of the Russians spying and corrupting the process and fixing the election to favor Donald Trump. And you see how things come together. The media working, doing its part. Major propaganda going on here. The administration doing its part because it is in charge of the apparatus of propaganda and misinformation and could offer Hillary Clinton a huge boost. Barack Obama went stumping for her. Joe Biden went stumping. And the captive turned emissary, that is Bernie Sanders, stole his votes, converted them to Hillary votes, and even so, she was still behind. She was not decisively in the lead. So now comes the big one. The big hammer had to be pulled out, and it was all about the Russians. Okay. So it's all about the Russians. But what proof is there? Well, we have reason to believe it's the Russians, and we start getting a lot of fudging from certainty to, well, it points to the Russians. We have intelligence agencies who are allotted billions of dollars to just deal with spying, who still can't say definitively who interfered with the election. Who did it? First, was it in fact done? And if so, who did it? They don't know. Well, that's odd. That is very odd. And now congressional leaders want investigations, and everybody's absolutely sure that this happened, but there's no proof. There is no proof. Let's take a little tour here, a little just this is just to remind us, to put into context the questions and the issues that would arise that we will be tackling shortly after this vote, the Electoral College vote, is formalized. I want to revisit this thing about Hillary Clinton, especially when she learns toward the end of the campaign, the active part of the campaign, that it's not really going so well. She's not as safe in victory as she thought she was going to be, even though they fixed a whole bunch of things. You know, we had the Democratic Party stealing votes all over the place, suppressing votes. We even had video tape of Bill Clinton violating the heck out of voting law, blocking entrances to the polling sites in polling stations where Hillary was not expected to do too well. We have people testifying in all over the country, especially in those areas where people were very annoyed at Hillary Clinton and the Democratic Party. They made them wait online to vote for 5 and 6 hours to cast their vote in order to discourage them. And they discouraged many voters. People just got fed up and went home. All these things are happening. We don't know these things because they're not being reported, except by independent people posting things on YouTube and through social media. But the idea was, as long as Hillary was prevailing and the plan was working, they didn't care about anybody's democratic rights. And they certainly did not want to assist a process that inevitably was going to work against them. So she had a clue, and her campaign clearly had a clue, that it was not going to be going very nicely for her at all. So she builds now, you know, she builds this narrative, and she builds on the narrative of the Russians. We're going to hear Hillary Clinton playing her anti-Trump card at the final presidential debate. This was the one moderated by Chris Wallace. Her contention that Russia secretly was backing Trump and undermining her campaign was how she ended this to and fro between her and Trump. And the Russians are interfering with the election and will probably cause me to lose. That was her fail-safe appeal to voters, because now you're talking about democracy. She's not even talking about herself. If this can happen to me, what, therefore, would they not do to all of us Americans? By then, you may recall that the WikiLeaks documents exposing her and the Democratic Party's sleazy and illegal activities had begun to sink in and alienate voters. Just listen to this. This is part of her exchange with Trump, but we'll only hear her part.
Yes. You are very clearly quoting from WikiLeaks, and what's really important about WikiLeaks is that the Russian government has engaged in espionage against Americans. They have hacked American websites, American accounts of private people, of institutions. Then they have given that information to WikiLeaks for the purpose of putting it on the internet. This has come from the highest levels of the Russian government, clearly from Putin himself, in an effort, as 17 of our intelligence agencies have confirmed, to influence our election. So I actually think the most important question of this evening, Chris, is finally, will Donald Trump admit and condemn that the Russians are doing this and make it clear that he will not have the help of Putin in this election?
The emails which were... Well, you know, right there, she knew that what she was saying was false. But it's okay. The Democratic Party knew. what she was saying was false. The intelligence community knew that what she was saying was false, because even at that time, at that or that early in this game of the Russians narrative, the what we learned is that the there was some suspicion, but nobody in the intelligence community could agree that it was the Russians, or that even the intrusion into the American, as she called it, the American system, that it was real. There was no way to prove anything. They had looked at it, but they hadn't proven anything. I want to run a piece by Judge Andrew Napolitano. You might have seen him. He's a senior judicial analyst for Fox News. It happens, by the way, that he's not a Republican. He's a libertarian. And this is how he deconstructed the whole thing. Who did this? Did it happen? Who is to blame? Is Hillary Clinton telling the truth? One shudders at the idea that she is capable of that. But listen to his deconstruction of this whole Russian question.
The emails which were exposed by WikiLeaks revealed a very strong bias on the part of high officials in the Democratic Party for the candidacy of Hillary Clinton, and a very strong prejudice on the part of the same people towards the candidacy of Bernie Sanders. Even though such bias and prejudice had been alleged by Sanders and denied by the Democratic National Committee. It even resulted in the resignation of the chair of the committee as a result of a unanimous request from the members of the committee and the intervention of President Obama himself. But in order to get this issue off the front page, the DNC and the Clinton campaign decided to blame, of all people, the Russians. They accused Vladimir Putin of being in cahoots with Donald Trump and having his intelligence services hack the DNC to expose emails to make Mrs. Clinton look bad and thereby benefit Donald Trump. But the Russians had nothing to do with it, because this week, a 30-year veteran of the National Security Administration, the NSA, the domestic spies who spy on all of us all the time, the former high-ranking NSA official who developed the software that the NSA now uses, which allows it to capture not just metadata, but content of every telephone call, text message, email in the United States, of every person in the United States of America. This individual said, guess what? The NSA hacked the Democratic National Committee. Why would the NSA hack the DNC? Because the members of the intelligence community simply do not want Hillary Clinton to be president of the United States, because she doesn't know how to handle state secrets. Because some of the state secrets that she revealed use the proper true names of American intelligence agents operating undercover in the Middle East. When they lost their covers, they ran for their lives, and some of them didn't run fast enough and lost their lives. It's very telling that the intelligence community would feel so strongly about Mrs. Clinton that they would attempt to sabotage her campaign to prevent her from becoming their boss. It's also telling that these folks would break American law in order to, in their view, save it. Welcome to my chambers.
All right, so there you go. A whole different perspective, and yet it sounds quite logical and quite feasible. This whole thing involving the president, involving leading members of Congress, involving administration officials and a whole bunch of people diverting our attention by saying it's Russia, because they have the apparatus in place, the propaganda apparatus in place to continue with that storyline and to confuse the people. It doesn't matter whether they're bringing the country closer and closer to the edge of some kind of military confrontation, with the president acting like the neighborhood, you know, yeah, you think you're going to get away with that? I'll pick my time, I'll pick my place, and you'll see what would happen. This kind of silly, childish, and very dangerous kind of reactions going on when they know the truth. At least they know that this was not Russia. Remember, we said that. We said that. Julian Assange, who published all of these records that showed up Hillary Clinton and the Democratic Party to be absolute sewers, he said the information was not a byproduct of hacking. It was leaks. And the information did not come from Russia. He said that. We had confirmation, although the president is saying, well, he's ordered this report due January the 20th. But already there are leaks of the report, again reinforcing it was Russia. If your report is due and you're wondering how come things are leaking, the report is not due until January the 20th. The Washington Post and the New York Times are publishing stories that it was Russia. And it wasn't. They have not produced any evidence at all. No definitive evidence at all of Russia's involvement in trying to steer the election toward Trump. No such evidence. I did say that this has all the earmarks of an internal issue, an internal leak. And it was, you can't name Russia, even though you could say, well, it's Russia, but you know you could only go so far with that until Russia faces you down and says, okay, you're maligning our entire country. It's time to produce. Let's go to a mutual, like some international body, file a formal complaint against the United States. But we have people like John McCain already talking about retaliation, and we have Barack Obama talking about retaliation against a lie. And it is all to protect Hillary Clinton. She has put the country now into a very bad bind by claiming Russia is interfering with the election and Russia caused her to lose. The benefit of going that route is she gets people all excited. The women, particularly, who have been supporting her campaign, hoping that she'd be the first woman president of the United States, they're on board. And we have all these Hillary Clinton historic lovers, people who loved Bill Clinton and are transferring their love to Hillary and are very, very upset that she has lost the election. Never mind the truth. Nobody's concerned about the truth here. I had on the shared with you on the program an interview with Reince Priebus, who is the head of the Republican National Committee, and who soon will be Donald Trump's chief of staff. He was interviewed by George Stephanopoulos of ABC. And there was just, it was a battle. The battle was Stephanopoulos insisting, and he's just the interviewer, insisting that it was the Russians. And Priebus is saying, listen, the reports were that the Democratic National Committee was hacked and the Republican National Committee was hacked. That was what the New York Times said. Not identifying any source, not ascertaining the truth of that. He said, we talked, and he's the head of the Republican National Committee. He said, I talked with the FBI twice when this claim surfaced, and they assured us that we were not hacked. We were not hacked at all. And then when the report surfaced again, they went back to talk to the FBI, and they confirmed there was no hacking of the Republican National Committee. There's a lot of lying going on. And that's one thing, but it's very dangerous lying. Very dangerous. Now, what I did say was this had all the earmarks of an inside job. I had said, or in speculated, that more correctly, that it might have been from the Democrat, some Democratic operative. That's what I said. It's an inside job, and I would look not to Russia, but to a Democratic Party operative who is steamed at what the Democratic Party is doing, and particularly having Hillary Clinton as its standard bearer in this election, and stealing the votes from and destroying the movement of Bernie Sanders, who absolutely shares the blame here. So that was my journalistic instinct. It's an inside job. And I came to that conclusion because Julian Assange said, no, it was not the Russians. And these are leaks. They could not find any indication, no electronic or cyber trail. That's what's been keeping this report from coming out. They can't find a cyber trail. Because whoever got this information did it the old-fashioned, low-tech way of putting their hands on documents, hard documents, and giving the documents to Assange, who printed it after checking them out. That was my theory, that it came from within the Democratic Party. But this explanation by Judge Napolitano is extremely interesting. That the information might have come from the intelligence community itself. The government would not admit it. The people who are supposedly investigating this with the with Putin and Russia in the crosshairs will never admit it, because to admit it is to admit something incredible going on here, and that is a coup. They would have to admit that we have experienced a coup conducted by U.S. intelligence officials against the government. That is very, very serious. And now you're seeing a lot of bad backpedaling, because now there's a report. But already, you see how the government is trying to counter the inevitable story by having the Washington Post and the New York Times and other media outlets parrot a new narrative that, you know, they're looking for the guilty parties. And you're getting words like, well, they assess that it was Russia. They're backpedaling now. They have a consensus between the FBI and the CIA. The consensus is that they believe, nobody's producing definitive proof, It's about what they surmise, what they believe, what they are thinking is likely to have happened, that kind of vague stuff. But interestingly, it's out there. A definitive explanation is due before January the 20th or by January the 20th. Already, the intelligence agencies are leaking their own report and putting a new twist on it. So we know it's internal. This is an inside job, which is one thing. But what is intriguing is the reason behind it, which is a very scary concept, really, that the NSA or some other intelligence outfit, persons within the intelligence community itself, has decided to bring this thing down on Hillary Clinton because she has caused, according to Napolitano's analysis, she has caused the needless deaths. We don't know of how many, but her careless and reckless handling of intelligence information, just like it was in the case of Benghazi. Now, we didn't know that there were people who were perhaps assigned different operations, intelligence gathering operations, but he mentioned the number as 60,000 assigned all over the place in the Middle East. People were able to hack into Hillary Clinton's computer in the basement and get into her information, extremely confidential information. And apparently, according to Napolitano's analysis, they were able to locate all kinds of information that they ordinarily wouldn't have once they tapped into Hillary Clinton's private server and private computer setup in the basement of her home. More information might have been gotten from Uma Abedin's computer that James Comey, the Federal Bureau of Investigation director, had reported as some new information with regard to the previous investigation that he was doing on the server. And that was a reference to the computer that Uma Abedin shared with her husband, Anthony Weiner. And there were more than 600,000 emails allegedly found on that computer, which was in her private possession. So the narrative definitely now must point to somebody, anybody, except Hillary Clinton. And she saw to it. It's the first thing she said when she was let back in the door, whether wittingly or unwittingly, by an unthinking Green Party through its so-called recount effort. You see how it all works? This is what we have to deal with as just regular people. We cannot trust the government. We cannot trust that they will say the truth. We certainly cannot trust Hillary Clinton. The truth and Hillary Clinton are like oil and water. They just don't mix. So knowing, she must know that she was caught there too, lying about confidential and top secret information that she chose to treat quite casually. It was a very stunning analysis by Napolitano. But we did have an indication, didn't we? You may recall that I shared with you a tape by Steve Pichenik, a former top-level intelligence officer, who just on the eve of the election had announced that there are many in the intelligence community, a group involving members of the military, law enforcement, and the intelligence community, this is what he said, have organized a counter coup, that's the word he used, to Hillary Clinton. And then after the election, he issued another statement saying, we have achieved our mission. We succeeded at our plan. And we did it to save America, he says. Well, you know, we did have some questions about that. He is, after all, from the intelligence community. So we ought to expect that they have a rationale for everything they do. But I'm saying, let's think about this a bit and see the very real possibility that this is quite true. If you pay attention to the language and who pops up when, who makes a statement when, what are they saying, who are they aiming at? And because I advise all the time, you listen very carefully to things. And you watch things very carefully. Because even though people may not be aware that they're sharing information, they are, in fact, if you're paying attention deeply enough. Even the president now seems to be backing away from this thing. Why? Because hard evidence is hard to come by. And he probably has begun to realize that this thing is deeper than he thought. He has no love for Vladimir Putin. And of course, you know, Hillary Clinton knows that. So she sets it up. He becomes the attack dog. And you can't get a better attack dog than the president of the country. And it now becomes a bipartisan issue where you have Democrats and Republicans on board. Let's get to this. She recedes into the background, just like this recount. Although she had the most to gain with the recount, she said nothing. She let the Green Party take the lead and open the door. She has on record that she conceded. She conceded. So it was not for her sake that she is joining the Green Party in its effort at recounting the vote. Precisely in those states where she wanted or she would have herself done a recount. Very coincidental, I'm sure. But the record will not reflect that Hillary Clinton demanded the recount. The record will reflect that it was the Green Party. And she got them to pay for it. So when these things are occurring, we have to always keep in mind, it's a possibility there's a whole other explanation for this. So don't be too eager to join the gang, to lend your support. It's quite possible that all along you've been played. You're getting played. We are getting played. It's a dangerous game. And what we ought to do is sit back, very, very aware that no matter what explanation they come to us with, more than likely, it's not true. It's not true. Well, I thank you for joining me today and allowing me to just stretch out on this. You see, this is what I think is the value of a station like this and a program like this where we engage. This is political science, by the way. This is political science, which we are teaching each other. And you are learning, and I am learning, and we all are learning how to regard the governmental process, how to maintain a very open mind, because much of what we think we know, we really don't know. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Meditations and Molotovs with Vincent Emanuele. You can reach me at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories at gmail.com. A pleasure always and a great privilege to be in your company. Tomorrow, we'll be talking about President Trump. Bye-bye. Somebody, serve somebody, serve somebody, serve somebody. Might be the devil. Let me tell you, sir.